Fingstrasse. Rock and the Blues on Get Ready to Rock Radio.
Thank you. This is the Pete Feenstra feature for Get Ready to Rock Radio, and that was In My Mind from John Lodge's brand new album, 10,000 Light Years Ago. It's great to have you here, John. That was a huge sounding track, huge sounding opening track, I should say.
Thank you, Peter. Nice to be with you today.
Right, was that conceived as being the, was that actually written as being the first track on the album?
Yes, it was. I'd written the 10,000 Light Years Ago song. I knew that was going to be the closing track, and I was trying to think of the right way to start the album. And on stage every night, when we do our technical sound check, I play these notes, which are basically E, E, and G, and bom, 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 and it gives me a real full spectrum of my sound in for my ear monitors. And I was listening to it one day, and I thought, that's what I do before a concert, so perhaps that's what I should do before. That's how it started. I put that together, put those notes together, and then basically wrote the song around that. And then Alan Hewitt, you know, my
keyboard player,
who produced it with me, we put it together like that, and with Chris Spedding and everyone.
I'm coming to Chris a little bit later. We actually had him on the show a good few months ago. It's fantastic. He's still out there playing. I mean, he's gigging as well as doing sessions for you.
He's really is busy. You know, he did a great album a few years ago. Robert Gordon, great album. You know, a tribute to Elvis. So that was pretty.
Unfortunately, they weren't able to tour behind that, but it was very, very good, as you said. But getting back to your album, going by what you've just said there, do you kind of start with the music then and then craft the lyrics after that?
It depends. I think 10,000 Light Years Ago, I had that title in my head while, so there's no specific way of doing it. And sometimes the melody comes first, or we make the rhythm that comes first. So I go it that way. So there's no specific way, and no specific way with the instruments. You know, like In My Mind was written on bass guitar, and bass guitar on 12-string, and then the 10,000 Light Years Ago was written purely on 12-string guitar. So there's no, and then In My Mind was written on piano. So there's no there's a very different way of approaching each song, really.
But did you at any point have a kind of a whole conceptual idea of what this album was going to be, or did the songs kind of lend themselves to how it ended up?
Well, I had this thing that had been floating in my mind for ages, that the future is always in reach, but the past has gone forever. I didn't quite understand what that meant, to be honest. I thought about it a lot more, and I thought, yeah, of course, the album should be about who I am now, and not a retrospective album, but use the things that influenced me in my past to be on this album now. So all the different musical influences and styles that I've listened to over the years, I wanted to reflect today, and this is, you know, who I am today, and my makeup as a bass player and guitarist and a singer, really, and a songwriter.
Although you do have that that wonderful song called Those Days in Birmingham, which is a million miles away, I guess, from your days at the Parkinson Cowan Works.
It's a million miles away, but I must tell you, I walked into Parkinson Cowan. Parkinson Cowan was a fantastic factory in Birmingham, making gas cookers and storage heaters. But they had the whole thing in there. They had foundry, they had chrome plating vats, they had everything. And I remember, going in there when I was 16, and I'd learned guitar, and I was learning away, and I walked in there one day to the chrome dipping vat.
Right.
There's a guy there called, I think his name was Johnny Fenn, and he had a band called The Vikings.
Right.
And this was like a million years before The Vikings really took off. And I couldn't believe it. There was really, so I used to go and spend hours talking to him about different chord structures, you know, while he was supposed to be working.
Wow. Well, listen, let's play that track now. This is called Those Days in Birmingham.
When the school bell rang at the birthdays in Birmingham. Looking back on every club I played, I wonder what became of you. Mother's title, the album room, will never fade away. Reliving those days, those crazy days in Birmingham. Remember those days back in Birmingham.
Was Those Days in Birmingham from the brand new John Lodge album 10,000 Light Years Ago. And I'm just looking, what, is this out on your own label or is it through Cherry Red?
It's through Cherry Red Records.
Yeah.
They approached me a few years ago and we all got a bit excited. And also because I've released it on album as well, on vinyl.
Yeah, oh yeah.
180 gram vinyl. And that's what excited me, to be honest, not the download parts and everything, but having been, I listen to vinyl now, I've got some great Jubal speakers and the Velvet amplifier and everything else and the Technics turntable. And I really enjoy listening to vinyl, you've got to take care of the albums, of course.
Oh yeah.
But the sound is so good and when they said they're going to make it on vinyl, I was really excited.
Quite so. Just before we leave those days in Birmingham, I was going to ask you this. You were in a band, I was checking it all up, you were in a band called the John Bull Breed. How long were you actually in them? Can you remember?
I can't remember, but it was a really interesting period of time.
Yeah.
Because we formed this little band, and really, it was to go to Germany and play. We had an offer to go, a few of us guys had had an offer to go to Germany and play in Hamburg, in Kiel, Schleswig, Lüneburg, for about 6 weeks, every day. And the Beatles had been there, and I thought, God, this could be, really good, interesting. So we formed a band with Brian Yates, who was Mark Stewart. He had a band called Mark Stewart and the Questers. And we formed the band together. I think we chose the name just because we're going to Germany,
Yeah.
How English can you be, John Bull Breed?
Well, yeah, it doesn't get much more English than that.
We had a great time. For me, it was a great learning curve for me because we were doing 45 minute sessions and 15 minutes off, 45 sessions on, 15 minutes off. And, we didn't know that amount of songs, so you made them up.
Yeah, it kind of hones your craft, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really did, The other one played 12 bar in whatever key, and let's see what, what lyrics come out when we start singing.
Well, I think it's great that you've dipped into the past, but as you said yourself, the whole album looks to the future, so it's all very positive. And I just wonder, you are, after all, an Ivor Novello Award winner for your contributions to music, and your last solo album was 1977, and I know you did one with Justin... the Blue Jays or whatever, but why is it taking so long then? I mean, it's an obvious question, I'm sure you always get asked this, but why is it taking so long to come back to your solo career?
I think it's because I am a moody blue, and I wrote the album in the 70s called Natural. I'm going to write some more songs to do another album. I actually started writing the songs for a new album, but then we went in the studios in the Moody Blues and we recorded an album called Octave.
Yes.
Which became a platinum album for us, and suddenly we were back on the road again after 5 years. And then we finished being on the road and went back into the studio and recorded Long Distance Voyager. So all my output, really, all the songs I was writing, were really going directly through Moody Blues channels and Moody Blues albums. And so there was no real need for me to write an album, not in my mind anyway. And but it's only because the last 10 years we haven't done anything as a Moody Blues.
Yeah,
I started to get frustrated and not really want to get back in the studio. And I wanted to find a way of creating or writing a new album about who I am today. I thought at one stage that 10,000 Light Years Ago would be a Moody Blues album. It felt as though it was going to go that way, but. Getting everyone together is pretty impossible, and I decided it should be a solo album anyway, because I wanted to reflect, who I am and my journey through my musical career, really, I suppose.
But ironically enough, having said that and having aimed to do that, cut a solo album and reveal who you are to your fans and everybody, you've got this very positive and uplifting track called Simply Magic, which features, of course, Ray Thomas and Mike Pinder, former Moody Blues.
Yeah, I wrote this song. The song is, I wrote it for my grandson, but it's got a parallel meaning in there, really. We read so many books and see so many movies and TV shows where everything's going really well and then the wheels fall off or the train smash. And I thought, wouldn't it be great to have a song where everything's going well and it gets better, and I thought that's what I'm going to write. So I wrote this song basically for my grandson, and I realised it was an acoustic song, but I realised there was a flute part on there, so I rang Ray up. Ray lived not far from me, and I rang Ray up and said, Ray, would you come and play flute on this album, on this track for me? And he said, yeah, of course. We keep together all the while, we send each other birthday cards and Christmas, and we email each other and everything else. But I went in the studio and recorded all Ray's flute parts. And then while we were there, Ray said, have you thought about asking Mike? And I said, no, I haven't, but it's a great idea. I'm going to ring Mike. So I rang Mike up in California and asked him if he'd play Mellotron on the track. And he said yes. So I sent him the files. And then Mike recorded his part.
Well, let's...
It's really nice because just recently we just finished a tour of America, and we played in San Jose. Mike came along with his family. Nice to see Mike after all these years. It's been a long time.
Well, let's play that track now. This is called Simply Magic, and this is John Lodge. was John Lodge and Simply Magic, track number 3 from his brand new album called 10,000 Light Years Ago. You can get that through Cherry Red Records. What's your website address, John, as well? For
johnlodge.com, really. Just johnlodge.com.
A great, great line on there which says, just when I thought nothing could get any better than this, you came along like the words of a song, and it kind of reflects exactly what you're just talking about. But one of the interesting things you just mentioned there was the way you recorded this. Now, I've read leading into this interview that you try to get as close as possible to doing this as a band would have done had they all been in the studio together. But I imagine you probably weren't, and as you just said a moment ago, you probably sent each other computer files or whatever they are. How do you kind of hang on to that organic quality doing it that way?
Well, what's really great about it, you know, when we started, we were all young and no boundaries, you know, and we had no other outside influences. To get everybody together today in a studio is pretty impossible, you know, because everyone's, you know, probably would turn up in a studio and not be in that creative mode on that particular day, you know, because there's so much other things going on. I thought, how can I do this? And the four people I wanted to work with, well, the three people other than myself, we've all got our own studios. Thought, if they could record their part in a studio, in their own studio, when they felt creative enough and they wanted to create, it's the closest I'm going to get to getting a group sound. And so we discussed the part, you know, so it was sent to a track to Chris. Chris would play parts on it, and then we'd email or talk to each other, and I'd say, yeah, I love that part of it. What about if we change this and went that way? And so we built each part up as though we were in the studio together, as we'd be doing, looking across at each other in the studio, you know, and that's how, so with Gordon Marshall on drums, exactly the same. I'd send him the track, and he'd put the drums on the track, you know, and I'd go around to his studio and listen, and we'd discuss it, and we'd change this, or we'd add more, or whatever, just exactly as we discuss in the studio together. You know, over the last decade, for me, recording in the studio has not been, you know, something I really enjoyed that much, because it's all taken part in the control room nowadays. You've got everyone just plugs into the control room, and you've got producer Watt sitting over here, you've got an engineer sitting over here, assistant engineer sitting over here, people walking in with cups of coffee, and you're supposed to be creating. You don't have your own space. And it's really important to have your own space. That's how we recorded all the albums in the early days. I know we may have all been sitting together in the studio, but you have your own space in the studio and you can discuss it, and you haven't got outside influences from people.
Like producers.
Not in the band.
Yeah, I like the band, yeah. Do you still find, therefore, that when you do discuss parts and things like this, that the other members of the project do actually contribute to the arrangements then, from how you originally kind of foresaw them?
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's the most important thing, I think, with people, because you put the basic arrangement in, like the song called Love Pass Me By, and that was written on, like, a 50s replica Steph Hall guitar. And then I wrote all the lead parts on the same guitar, so we had this sort of 50s type feel to it. And then when I sent it to Chris Bedding, Chris listened to it, loved the track, and said, John, you know you've got all the guitars playing all these parts. We should get a violinist, a guy called Mike Pickett, to come and play it for them, you know, just like Stefan Grappelli has the idea of this song anyway.
Kind of a hot club thing, yeah.
He took all the melodic lines I put in there, and then he adapted them how he would want to play them and how he interpreted those lines. That's the most important thing with everything, you know. You have to have people creating with you and to give you their full support, you know, and create something that they're exciting about. Because you don't want people who are just going to play what you've written, because you might as well play yourself.
So let's play that track now. This is Love Pass Me By.
Last night when I was sleeping, I thought you were creeping into my cold and lonely room. But I was only dreaming, staring up at the ceiling, thinking of you and you and you alone. Love passed me by when you said goodbye for another guy. Gone was the chance of our romance when you said goodbye. Now as I lay in my cold and lonely room, it's the day love passed me by.
And Love Passed Me By from the brand new album 10,000 Light Years Ago on Cherry Red Records. And that's that really old hot club feel to that. I love that. You know, did you have a... Wow. Wow. Did you have any problem at all about thinking about... this isn't the longest of albums, of course, but I'm just thinking of the sequencing. Did you have to think about where you were going to place that in the running...
Like any of the Moody Blues albums, we spend a lot of time in the old days working out what song should follow what song, and that's exactly what I've done on this album. And in actual fact, if you get the vinyl version, I've changed the running order, because, you know, to end side one and then you go start side two, and so it's got to all come with the same energy, you know, and so I've changed the running order. But it is important. And the other thing is, I was going to add another song to the album, and then when I heard the album, I thought, no, it's done, it's finished.
I was going to say that, so for people who haven't heard this, it lasts about 30 minutes. Now, believe it or not, in one way, it's surprisingly short, but in another way, it's quite refreshing, because I get sent so many albums for review, and many of these albums are all effectively double albums that are just trying to fill out the space of that the CD allows you, and that whole original craft idea of an album, which in the old days was 40 minutes after all, two sides of 20, that seems to have gone almost.
Yeah, and I buy albums, and I think, wonder why they put those songs on there, you know, and you think, oh, there must be fillers, and you have great songs that you want to hear, you know, and I think on the album, I really wanted to be this length, because I wanted the 180 gram. I wanted those grooves to be really deep. And I went to Abbey Road Studios and cut the vinyl there in Abbey Road with a great cutting engineer there, you know. And it was important for me to get the volume right of the record. And you could cram a lot of music onto a CD. But as you know, when you turn a CD up louder, everything gets louder, you know. It doesn't move up in the right proportion like a vinyl album, or it just, you know.
Yeah. Well, that in my mind,
you have the loudness button.
Yeah.
So it's a technical thing to make the CD sound bigger and it quiet.
Well, I mean, that, in my mind, the track we played earlier on, it's kind of resonant of Abbey Road, really. I mean, that's known for that.
Yeah.
Huge, you know. Let's just quickly talk about Chris Spedding that I mentioned earlier on, and he features prominently on this album. There's some wonderful guitar parts, and again, he also appeared on your last solo album in 1977. Does that mean you've stayed constantly in touch in the intervening years?
Not really. I mean, Chris came along. We had a great time making Natural Avenue, and in aspect, Chris on that album played a Gibson G2, a red one, and I remember going out after the recordings and buying one. I thought, I'm going to try and find out how Chris plays it, you know, this particular guitar. But no, I just like, Chris came up like me really through rock and roll, and I'll just follow his career really, you know, through the Robert Gordons and through Roxy Music and through his own band, of course. And I just like what Chris does, how Chris plays, you know, because you've got all the great Scotty Moore people, guitar legends, and Cliff Gallup from Genesis.
Cliff Gallup, yeah.
So I was just talking to him all the while. I'd say, Chris, I really think it's like a Cliff Gallup song, you know, a guitar solo here, or a Scotty Moore. And he knew exactly what I was talking about. I didn't have to,
I've got a couple more questions if I can, but before that, let's just play the title track of the album, and this is 10,000 Light Years Ago.
Memories from a lifetime, dreams far and away, things we already know from 10,000 light years ago. And the universe, so afraid, hanging fast against the tide of change, but never knowing which way the wind would have to blow for us to know where we are going to be 10,000 light years ago.
Yeah.
lovely stuff. 10,000 Light Years Ago by John Lodge from the album 10,000 Light Years Ago on Cherry Red Records. Now, anybody that didn't have your first album and comes to this album, they're still going to... there's still some discernible Moody Blues influences on there, and I think that's definitely the case on that track, John.
Yeah, there is. It's really important. I got Brian Howe from Bad Company, his lead singer, who was with me for many years. I asked him to come along in the studio and just add that bottom timbre to all the vocals on the harmonies. And so there's some, you know, Moody Blues type harmonies in there. That's how we used to do them. As Moody Blues, you know. Yeah, I mean, I am a Moody Blue, some influences have got me that way, you know.
And of course, a couple of people have Facebooked me to ask you about the Moody Blues, if you don't mind. I mean, one of the questions that comes up is, back in the old days, did you have to struggle to stand up and say to presumably record companies and managers and the like that you were going to stick with your own material rather than do covers, which I imagine people wanted you to do at the time?
Yeah, I mean, after we recorded Days of Future Past, and we had success with that with the album. It got in the top 20 in the UK the first time round, and then in America it was a huge hit with Nights in White Satin, of course, and Nights in White Satin. And we had all those successes. And then the head of Music A&R at Decca Records came to us and said, "Now you've got this hit record, I've got this great idea. I want you to do Over the Rainbow."
Really?
He was like, no, adios. So we're the new chairman, and he had a meeting with all of his people and said, "Whatever the Moody Blues want to do, they do. Please, everyone else, stay out of the room." And that was the last time we ever had a meeting with the A&R department at Decca Records.
The big question, of course, is Nights in White Satin, was that self-evidently going to be a big hit after you recorded it, or did it surprise you?
I was utter surprise that it was a hit. Justin wrote the song so I could talk about it, Just loved the song. I thought what we did with it, all the parts, Mike's mellotron, race, flute, our harmonies, bass playing, and Justin's vocal. It just sounded so different to anything else. And we never thought it was going to be hit because it was over 4 minutes long, and in those days you had to be 2 minutes 53 seconds to get plays.
Yeah, it's another white shade of pale, wasn't it, really?
So we were pleasantly surprised, but it wasn't that. We knew we were on the right road. You can't get people to buy your records, but you can have your own inward satisfaction, And we did have our own inward satisfaction. We knew what we were doing was what we wanted to do. And whether it was successful or not, it was out of our hands. That was
Nights in White Satin, never reaching the end. Letters I've written, never meaning to send. Beauty I'd always missed with these eyes before. Just what the truth is, I can't say anymore, 'cause I love you. Some hand in hand, just what I'm going through, they can understand. Some try to tell me thoughts they cannot defend. Just what you want to be, you will be in the end. And I love
And the same question really to your own song. I mean, you've written some great songs yourself, but I'm just a singer in a rock and roll band. Now, that was just such a... It captured a moment in time. Did you feel it was one of your best at the time as well?
I probably found out about it later.
Lovely bass line on that.
You know, because I wanted to write this rock and roll song, and, you know, because I'm basically a rock and roll person.
Yes, going back to, yeah.
This rock and roll song. People have, you know, decided the Moody Blues is the answer to the universe, you know, and I just want to say, now we just singers in a rock and roll band.
Producer for a while, and you produced my old mates Trapeze. Now, was that because they were on your label at the time?
No, I got a tape from Tony Perez, who was Trapeze's manager, when the five piece, and he sent me a tape and said, would the tape listen? So I listened to the tape, and then I went up to see we had a Civic maybe, and Johnny Jones was the singer at that time, and of course all the rest of the boys, and Mel Kelly and Dave and everyone, just great band. And then I went in the studio and recorded the first album with them, and we had pretty much good success with that. I mean, it wasn't a huge album, but successful wise, and from the song, you know, all this, I think it was the number one song in Holland, actually. And then I was about to record the next album, and then Tony rang me up and said, oh, the band's broken up, it's only a three-piece band. with Glenn Hughes doing the vocals.
Yeah, fantastic singer, of course.
So I said, well, that's fine. Let's get in the studio. So I went in the studio, and I produced Medusa, which I think, you know, from Trapeze's point of view, great rock, English rock record. Real, not rock and roll, rock. It was an English rock record. Brilliant.
Well, Glenn's still playing some of that stuff.
I know, he's re-recorded. He gets in touch with me occasionally, when Tony has to speak to Tony. And I re-released all the albums a few years ago on CD again, remastered them, and they charted in Texas, so that they went back on the road for a while as Trapeze.
Unbelievable. This last question, John, and it goes back to the Moody Blues, and you said in the past that the Moody Blues longevity is tied up with the fact that you stuck to your original values, really. I mean, do you think those ideas and aspirations of the late 60s have lasted the course?
I do a lot of Q&A's, little sessions with people who want to talk about music and playing music and what instruments they should play. My biggest thing is always say, be truthful to yourself. Don't try and play the instrument that's not you. Listen to a record and find out which part of the record you like, and that may be the instrument you should follow. But be truthful to yourself. Write your own songs. Even if they're not right, just write them, because you explore things. And then, you may not be a great songwriter, but because you explore things, you might find a record you like by someone else, but you can change it to as if you'd written it, because you know how it works and how the song is made up.
This is a Pete Feenstra feature. I've been speaking to John Lodge about his brand new album called 10,000 Light Years Ago on Cherry Red Records. It's been an absolute pleasure, John. We're going to play out on a good old rocker on the album. This is called You Drive Me Crazy. And thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.